You know, reflecting on these readings, one of the things that becomes very clear is that we are a brother's keeper. We are responsible not only for our conduct, but for our neighbors as well. If you really look at this reading from Ezekiel, there is that great warning. It says, you know, if you see them doing it wrong, if you see the wicked doing a guilty thing, tell them. Remind them that there's supposed to be something better than that. God will hold you responsible if you don't. We get this clear exposition from Romans. We get this great reminder from Paul. He says, you know, we all know we're not supposed to steal, kill, covet, commit adultery, whatever those commandments are. But if we really want to make it simple, love your neighbor. Show that love for your neighbor. Not just say, well, they should know better, and turn around and walk away, but genuinely say, no, they should know better. Say something. It really comes together in this gospel, this great reminder, if your brother sins against you, tell him his fault between you and him alone. Not in a group, not in a mass crowd, not in a collective stoning, but go to him and say, hey, you can do this better. You did wrong by me, and we need to fix that. It's such a fly in the face to a common consensus today. I mean, there's a sort of an attitude in the world now that sort of pushes against this idea and really immediately sees any kind of criticism as an immediate assumption that the person criticizing sees themselves as above any criticism themselves. This idea that if a person is calling someone else out, then obviously they feel they must not be doing anything wrong. And it's quite the opposite. Jesus never said, hey, make sure you're perfect first and then go and point out other people's faults. He says, no, if the person sins against you, if your brother sins against you, go to him. Sit down with him. Talk about it. Express things. We have to move past this idea that the person who is responsible for calling someone out has to be perfect before they can ever actually point out a shortcoming of somebody else. And it's not that we're supposed to revel in someone else's shortcomings. It's not that we're supposed to get somehow excited at someone else failing at something that we're good at. Quite the contrary. We're supposed to be showing love for our neighbor. This growth and correction. And all these things, in seminary, we referred to all of this as fraternal correction, brotherly correction. And of course, in seminary, we practically lived on top of each other. In college seminary, we lived on a campus. The entire college was one building. Basically, five hallways, a chapel, and a library. I mean, basically, my life for 4 years was five hallways, a chapel, and a library. And you couldn't leave campus unless you actually had permission, written permission. So usually you just sort of hung around for long periods of time. And there's only one TV that we could watch. And we only got network television, so we only had three channels and four on a really good day when the weather was just right and the cloud reflected the signal just perfectly for us. So we only had a few channels, but there was good fraternal correction, there's bad fraternal correction. And I think about this, after dinner every night, and inevitably some of the guys would gather in the room and they'd watch TV, and they'd watch, well, they only got CBS, ABC, and NBC, as you can guess what they watch, but inevitably they'd be watching one of three channels, and one of my brother seminarians would stand in the back of the room. Now, there are other things to do in the room. You can play pool, you can play ping pong, you can do all kinds of things, but he'd stand in the back of the room. And any time anything remotely close to the approximation of evil came on the screen, whether it was a questionable commercial or anything, he would immediately criticize everyone watching TV. Not directly, but indirectly. He would basically just shout across the room, oh yeah, that's a great use of your time, or oh yeah, that's a thing you need to see and you can have memories of later. And he would just shout across this criticism. I mean, and it reached a point where really the only response to what he did was that everyone just sort of would turn and go, just shut up, but I mean, it was this kind of tune-out moment. Because instead of, it's hilarious, because instead of recognizing it as his desire for charity, it was just abrasive. It was tiresome. Because it wasn't anything constructive, it wasn't anything helpful, it was just throwing barbs at people. And it just made people angry, and it actually galvanized some of the students against anything that he had to say, because it was just this constant, ongoing beration for them watching any television whatsoever. We can discuss later the finer points of whether or not there's actually anything worth watching on TV. That's a separate issue altogether. But the first and primary concern is that anything, and it's just yelling at them. Not talking to them particularly, but in a crowd, in a group, just shouting at them, literally. It's not going to help us. It's not a very direct way, and oftentimes it just sort of galvanizes the person against what it is that they're not supposed to be doing anyway. On the other hand, I can tell you of a separate moment where it wasn't an evening, it was an afternoon, and one of my brother's seminarians had rented a movie. And whether or not he knew that there was very, very bad content in the movie when he rented it or not, I don't know. But I do know that myself and another seminarian, we were walking by at one of those moments in the movie where there were some really questionable things going on in the movie. And we turned and we sat down with the guy who rented the movie and we said, "Is this really what we should be watching?" And he looked at us and he said, "You know what, you're right." And he turned it off and we found something better to do. And I would love to tell you that fraternal correction goes that well every single time. I would love to tell you that every time, in charity, in love, when we point out the struggles of another, that it goes well. But I can honestly tell you, I'll give you a third example just to bring home the point. My first year as a seminarian in a college seminary, it was my responsibility, it was my, as they call it, house duty, to unlock the front door of the school every morning, and I would turn on the lights in the public spaces. I would turn on the lights in the public access hallways in the library and places like that. And at the end of every day, I would do it all in reverse. I would lock the front door, and I would turn off all the lights in the public access areas. And in seminary, we have something called grand silence. Grand silence starts at 11 p.m. And at 11 p.m., what happens is that all the public spaces are supposed to be vacated. We're all supposed to go back to our rooms. And whether you study or go to bed, either way, remember, you still have to get up and be in church at 6 o'clock in the morning. So they're really hoping you're going to try and get those last 6 hours of sleep before you have to get up in the morning. But grand silence starts at 11. So the library is supposed to be empty. The lights are supposed to be shut off. Everything in the chapel is supposed to be empty. The lights are supposed to be shut off. We're supposed to turn off all these lights. And as my responsibility, I went into the library one night. And there at the table was one of the students sitting, and he had lots of books open in front of him. He was probably working on a paper. And I sat down at the table across from him, and I said, "Look, I'm sure that you're concerned about the paper. I know you're very, you know, driven, and you want to, you know, get this done. But it is grand silence, and we should all be in our rooms now. Maybe you can start again fresh tomorrow." And he looked across the table at me, and he... Well, I can't exactly repeat what he said in polite conversation without being criticized and having a foul mouth. So the gist of it is he told me to go away. And I heard him say that, and I said, "Great talk." And I got up and I left, and that was it. I gave him my all, and that moved from there. I knew from personal experience that the rector would be along in about 10 minutes, and he would tell him to go where to go. So that would be enough right there. So I didn't have to go get witnesses. The head of the school was about to come and sort that problem out. I didn't have to. My point is that we are called to this correction. We can't just look at someone, know that they're doing something wrong, and say, "Well, you know, they know better," and walk away. It's not enough. It is our responsibility. We are responsible for our neighbor, and that's whoever we encounter, to sit down. Not in a public setting, not in a place where we can criticize and force them to feel defensive and make them feel like they're being attacked. But one-on-one, in an individual way, to sit down with someone and say, "Hey, we can do better than this. We should do better than this. And it has to be corrected." And sometimes it'll be well received. Sometimes it won't. I can honestly tell you that I have sat down with various friends of mine and at different points told them, "I don't really think you should be doing this." And I can tell you with most of my friends, because they are my friends, they will look me in the eye and go, "I really appreciate you saying that." More times than not, they go right back to doing it. But I actually took the time to say something. And they know where I stand. And it's present in their minds every time they see me. And whether or not that actually means that they're all going to become better people, or they're just going to acknowledge the fact that I think that what they're doing is wrong, doesn't change the fact that we are to show that love for our neighbor. Not just the ones we like, not just for the ones that are convenient for us, but genuinely call to love our neighbors. It isn't some kind of, you know, preachy soapbox where we get to stand up and tell people what they're doing wrong. Quite the opposite. It's supposed to be an invitation to love, to challenge them to grow into something more profound, to something deeper, to something greater. You know, for me, it so much comes back to this great reminder from Paul to the Romans. You know you're not supposed to commit adultery or covet or steal, but if you really want to know what the law is, love your neighbor. I'll close with this. One of my professors at Mundelein used to say it all the time, so it stuck in my mind pretty well. He said, "Gentlemen, God tells us to love our enemies. He also tells us to love our neighbors. That works out well because they're often the same people, but that's not the point. The point is that because we are called to show this love, I should be able to follow you around all day and never know who are your friends and who are your enemies based on how you treat them."